Welcome back to the podcast. You're listening to Inside the Banjoverse. I'm your host, Enda Scahill, and today we have a treat in store if you are into bluegrass guitar or any type of flat picking. Jake Eddy is a mesmerizing musician. I found him on Instagram, where he is a huge success, and you can also find him on jakeeddy.com. He's a prolific teacher, an unbelievable practicer, and I think you're going to really enjoy this interview. Before we kick it off, a big shout out to all of my supporters on Patreon. And if you would like to get behind all of my banjo-related activities, you can do so on patreon.com/EndaScahillBanjo. The link is in the show notes or in the description below if you're watching on YouTube. So is it Eddy or Edie?
Jake Eddy, yeah, Eddy.
Eddy, yeah. Hey man, I'm a big fan. I follow you on Instagram.
Where you're oh, very cool, man.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, and I'm a huge I'm a picking nerd, right?
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah, I figured that. Yeah, so I've been teaching for years, right? And over the last 2 years when I started this Patreon thing, and I've loads of people on, and they're, you know, getting into the minutiae of picking. And then I've ended up down this whole rabbit hole of the cracking the code with Troy Grady and Pick Slant and stuff that I never really thought about ever before, because in the world of Irish music, a lot of stuff is pretty straightforward, you know, or else I was just doing it naturally without having to think about it. And then as I'm trying to problem solve and ask loads of questions, suddenly I'm becoming like really obsessed with picking patterns. Yeah. And then I come across you on Instagram and I'm like, wow, this guy's got it seriously dialed in. So.
Oh, thank you, man. Yeah. I actually recorded a couple of years ago, I recorded some stuff with Troy, some of that cracking the code stuff. And I don't know if it ever came out or anything, but yeah, we've connected a little bit at some point.
I emailed him, asked him, Troy, this whole world of tenor banjo that you haven't even looked at. He emailed back and he goes, yeah, man, you know, if we ever make it over to Ireland, which is highly unlikely. And then he said,
well, it was funny. There was a thing that he put out. There was a little clip of mine that he put out, and it said something like, this, we usually say don't do this, but it seems to be working good for Jake or something like that.
It's fucking Yeah. He told me I had reverse dart thrower hand picking, and I'm like, "What's that? Throwing darts at your head?" I mean,
amazing.
Yes, reverse dart thrower.
Oh yeah, that look. yeah.
That's a good look. Good look for a banjo player. Anyway, give me a little bit of background. You're West Virginia.
Yeah, West Virginia, man. I've been here forever, for you know, as long as I've been around, pretty much, and you know, son of a banjo player. My mom was a banjo player and then guitar player. And her dad was a banjo player and a guitar player. And my dad's grandpa was a picker, and I had fiddlers on my dad's side of the family and all that. So I just, yeah, I got it kind of from all sides, really. And it was just a, you know, natural thing. I learned, like, my grandpa was really into you know, bluegrass, traditional bluegrass, like we listen to the Stanley Brothers and Once Upon Fiddlers and Flat and Scruggs and Reno and Smiley and Jimmy Martin. And then on my dad's side, my cousin, this guy Lester Newberry, was an old time fiddler. So he would show me, like, you know, tunes like Ragtime Annie and like Mississippi Sawyer and stuff like that. So pretty well rounded, like, players, you know, to be around as a kid. It's pretty special.
So was there a lot of kids your age that were into bluegrass and old time music? Was it just because of the family connections?
Yeah, definitely because of family connections, I feel like. I mean, we would go to festivals and stuff, and there would be like younger kids who picked, but I was kind of, I don't know. I mean, at risk of sounding like an asshole, like, I was pretty good when I was a kid. So like, to play with other kids wasn't really, it didn't really work for me. I didn't enjoy that as much, you know? So yeah, mostly the family.
And so did you get like formal lessons in like this one is a downstroke, this is an upstroke, due to, you know?
No, nothing like that. I took a few banjo lessons once when I was maybe 12, 13, you know, just working out of a book, you know, like I think the Pete Wernick book or something. And, but no, other than the, you know, a few months of banjo lessons, I never have had a teacher. And like, you know, and even like my mom, my grandpa and them, they could show me things like to listen and to watch them play or whatever, but there was no, they didn't have any skills as far as teaching goes. Like they didn't know how to explain things to me, you know?
So how do you operate then as a teacher?
Well, yeah, it's a good point. You know, it took me a long time to be able to, like, I had to figure out myself why things worked and didn't work, you know, having not had a teacher. Like I had to, you know, so I spent all this time in my life and coming up just figuring out how to play well and play comfortably, you know, by watching other players, by listening to records, stuff like that. And then to teach, you know, to be able to teach, I had to spend a lot of time before that, like examining my own play and coming up with kind of like an ideology of like, why do these things work and why is this the best way and whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I never did think, you know, I never did have a great teacher. So, you know, and I think almost in some ways that has helped me teach because I know how I wish I would have been taught, you know, I know how I would have liked to have things explained to me. And so I had to do it the hard way, but yeah, I mean, with my students, like I try to help them skip all the years of confusion, you know, the best I can.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a similar experience, you know, playing. Just played for years and I was just playing. And then I ended up on a week's teaching camp in Alsace in France, which is right on the German border. And I had one student for 4 hours every day.
And yeah.
he was German. And so he spent I think it's important because he spent the entire week going, hold on. Why do you do a downstroke on this note? And I'm like, I don't know. And by the end of the week, I had done this like, deep analysis of my own playing and had kind of formulated a method.
Well, that's the thing. And I was always kind of like a natural. I always felt like growing up, like it made sense to me and like inherently, which is great for me as a player, but to explain it to people, yeah, it would be kind of like, well, you know, I had to like almost study. Yeah. I had to study myself, you know, so I could explain it. And like, you know, and over the years, you know, you would have people come up to me and say like, man, that's really interesting how you navigate that turnaround on Blackberry Blossom. And I'll go, oh, okay, I'll remember that you said that. And then I'll go back and look and see why, you know. So it took, you know, yeah, from listening to other folks' dissections of my playing as well as my own to kind of get me to be able to teach for sure.
So I reckon... Now, and this is only my broad brush, right? So teaching for about 30 years. Now, I always say when I was teaching and I was 17, like that was irresponsible teaching because I didn't know what I was doing, right? So I teach alternate picking. So,
yeah.
And I'll start anyone off teaching them a reel because it's got eight beats in a bar, right? Or eight notes in a bar. And so it's good to establish down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up. And I reckon that about 40% of players naturally pick in a regulated fashion, and that 60% don't know what they're doing. And when I'd say to them, you just did an upstroke when, you know, and they're like, oh, I have no idea. And so they're,
yeah.
Have you a feel for that? Like for a natural picker and then someone that has to work it.
Definitely. I think it's a much higher number of players that have no idea what's going on as far as pick direction goes. You know, I get a lot of students who like, they're playing the right notes, they're playing the right rhythms, but their right hand is just like the most scariest thing you've ever seen, you know? And the other thing is like, you know, you explain alternate picking to them, and a lot of people think that alternate picking just means that every other note switches direction with no regard to the rhythm that you're playing, you know? But it's all about this thing of like the downbeats are downstrokes, upbeats are upstrokes, right? And that's So they'll say, well, hey, why didn't you just play two downstrokes in a row? It's like, well, because those were two quarter notes, right? And that thing becomes another issue. But yeah, I mean, definitely it's so much better to naturally understand that than have to learn it, you know? But yeah, I mean, I never had any qualms about like alternate picking. That made sense to me because it comes from rhythm playing, right? When you're playing rhythm, all the down beats are on down strokes, all the upbeats are on upstrokes. So if if you're shrinking down your rhythm technique to play individual strings, you should, you know, that should maintain.
Yeah.
But not always that easy. But
I always use the example of, I don't know if you know what a bowron is, right? It's like, you know, the Irish drum. Have you seen that being played? It's played on.
Yeah, yeah, right? Sure.
I reckon, well, here's a mandolin, right? I always reckon that every single person on planet Earth knows that if you went to play a reel on a bowron, you're going to go down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down.
Right, 100%, yeah.
Give him a pick, and it's like down, down, up, 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 you know?
Yeah, right, that's interesting. Yeah, that's really interesting. It's like, I mean, if you were scratching your leg, you would scratch this way, up, down, up, down, up, down. Everything, like nature is kind of like that, you know?
Yeah.
Alternating is like a thing that makes sense. You don't walk left, 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 right, right, left, right, right, right. You know, you just. But, you know, we're lucky that that feels natural for us, you know, and a lot of students like. You know, to grow up in a musical family and stuff is such a privilege because it's like you don't. You know, all the things that we take for granted, just about like. Yeah, alternate picking or. Just learning tunes, playing tunes, whatever. It's not, you know, for someone who's not raised up that way, it can be pretty daunting.
Yeah. Yeah. I run into that a lot because I grew up, you know, the immersion in music. And one of the big things with Irish music is the swing within the rhythm. That it doesn't make any sense and it's almost impossible to define it. And if you were to write it with all the dotted notes, it wouldn't make any sense.
It'd be right.
Almost unplayable. And I understand the privilege of just growing up with the immersion of that and mm-hmm. then trying to teach it to a dentist from Connecticut who doesn't even have a session that he can go to, you know, how do you explain that? You know, so
yeah.
Is that yeah. something you run into as well?
Yeah, man. I mean, 100%. And that's why I pretty much, if at all applicable, I'd force my students to go to a jam, you know, like, you know, I say force lightly, but I definitely will guilt them about it. Like, you know, yeah, because without like, there's just so much of it that you can't understand if you don't play with other people or if you don't hang with, like the hang will teach you so much. Just being around with listening to records and all that stuff. Like, it's huge. And yeah, so I've had students who are, yeah, like you said, the dentist from Connecticut. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of those guys. And, you know, it's like, go to the jam. Like I pretty much make them go to a jam where I'll say, hey, find your local jam and like, let's not meet again until you go, you know, or whatever. And it's just like, because there's things that you can never, ever teach over Zoom, especially. And there's things you can never teach one-on-one either. Like so much of it is just, you know, like learned experience and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you teach? Do you do in person? You teach online clearly?
Yeah. Well, so like anytime I'm teaching, like a 1 hour block or, you know, one-off lessons. Like, yeah, I'm teaching online. I don't take students for in-person lessons, you know, unless they're doing my homestay thing, which you may be seeing. Like I have students that live in my house.
Yeah. tell me about that. That's what I wanted to ask about that.
Yeah. So I had a friend who is a jazz guitar teacher and educator in Canada. And he does kind of a homestay program where he hires an assistant and they live with him for a year or two. And in exchange, he like teaches them jazz. And I'm like, well, that sounds horrible, but I would love to teach students for a week, you know, or something like that. And so I've had, you know, I have students that come out for like, you know, 4, 5, 6 days and we're just attached at the hip. Basically. I mean, we wake up and make coffee and put records on and learn tunes and jam and go to jams and cook together. And I mean, everything we do is like this whole immersive like experience together. And so I've probably had, I don't know, maybe 30 students or so in the past year passed through here. And it is a special thing because it's what we're talking about. I can teach anybody on Zoom for an hour, show them something that'll make them a little better, and that's cool. But I've seen students come here who can really get into the groove of like living the life and being in the community and hanging and listening to records and learning tunes. And in a week's time, I'll see their whole perspective of the music change. And it's amazing, to see if I'm going to teach you a lick on Zoom, I'm going to teach you here how to be a flat picker or whatever. It's like a different thing. It's not just about put your fingers here, but it's like what to listen to, what to listen for, why, how to think about listening to records, how to learn a tune, why to learn a tune, developing taste, what sounds good, what sounds like shit, why, like how to be able to discern the difference. So it's like all those things. And there's also no time constraint. So if I'm teaching a student for an hour, I feel like I owe them something in an hour's time. Like they have to improve in an hour, whether it's a little bit or a lot, they have to take something away. Whereas here, like if we decide that it's in our best interest to take a bike ride and talk about Tony Rice, then we'll just take a notion and go do it. I don't like there's infinite time to get into whatever might inspire us to get better. So it's pretty special. It's been really, really good. I can't recommend it enough. Really.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. Would you be wrecked at the end of it? Are you tired from that amount of intensive time with somebody? Are you an
Man, it's
introvert kind of?
I'm a freak, man. I no, not really. I do sometimes get a little worn out if I have back to back. Like last month, I had, I think, three students back to back, 3 weeks straight. That was a little heavy. But usually, if the student is like actually improving and absorbing things, when like there's nothing I want to do more than play more and teach them more and hang with them more. Like as soon as my last student left, he was great, really inspiring guy, hard worker, good player. Like when he left, the next 2 weeks, I was in my studio like cutting this new record, and I felt really like my chops were good and fresh, and I felt nimble, and I felt inspired and excited because we had had this like great experience. So as long as they're not an asshole and they take a shower, I love to have them here.
How does your wife feel about it?
She's great. I mean, she's great. She really, she's great. I mean, more often than not, she kind of becomes pretty attached to the students as well. It's like, it's a lot. It's like moving in with someone that you never met. So you have like, you share all sorts of like experiences with them, and you tell, the students tell me stories and things that they would probably have never told anyone before. We get like pretty close pretty fast. So it's kind of yeah, I mean, but she likes it. In our house, we just moved into a new house that has like plenty of space, and like so our third floor is like reserved for the student alone. So like if the student wants to go upstairs to their place and like practice or take a shower or watch TV or whatever, it's not like 5 feet away from me. It's like, they can go far away, and it's so no, it's really good. It's great. She likes it, and if like she, I notice her getting a little tired. Like, yeah, well, we have them back to back, same as me, but like we have a student coming next week that he's coming from Texas, and we met him before at a camp that I taught, and yeah, we're both excited to have him here because we know him and we like him, and yeah, so it works really well for us. I can't say many wives would be down with this setup, but
Yeah.
she's good.
Yeah. You haven't had to throw anyone out after 2 days yet, though.
I haven't. There was one that I'd thought about it. There was one that I'd thought about it for sure. And if he's watching this, it's like they'll never know. They'll never know which one of them it was. But yeah, there was one instance where I kind of was like ready for the guy to go. But other than that, no. I mean, like, they're actually kind of similar people. They all share some traits because it's a certain kind of person that's willing to like, it's a certain kind of teacher that's willing to invite a stranger into their house to live and learn, and it's a certain kind of student that's willing to do that as well. So it's, you know, but I've had guys from all sorts of different backgrounds. I mean, we've had all the typical, like, doctors, lawyers, whatever, but also, like, we had a professional tennis player. We've had professional musicians. We had an author. We just had a Delta pilot. Just every job you can imagine, we've pretty much had it here. We had a guy who worked saute in a fine dining restaurant who cooked for us quite a bit while he was here. You know, so yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of guys have passed through here. It's pretty cool.
It sounds amazing. All blokes, all fellas.
You know, yeah. And that's sort of like, I guess not a surprise to me. I mean, because this is kind of like, you know, bluegrass guitar dudes are like kind of one thing. But then also, like, I sort of understand that it might be a different feeling for a woman to want to come do this, because it's like going to stay in a dude's house that you've never met. Like, I get that there's kind of a little strange aspect to it. But I'm open to it, you know, come one, come all. I'm cool with whatever. It just hasn't really, the opportunity hasn't really arose. But, it, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Are you perfectionistic, Jake? You were talking about, like, really wanting to, you know, the people on the hour. I mean, I'm the same. I'm like, have they improved drastically in this 40 minutes that I've talked to them, you know?
I think I'm more of a perfectionist. Like, well, I think I'm more reasonable with my students. You know, it's easy for me to look at it from the outside. Go, look, man, you're doing great. Let's keep working on whatever, as opposed to like hounding them to do everything exactly perfect all the time. But, you know, in my own journey as a player, definitely have that perfectionist, like, to a fault. You know, like, there's still days, oftentimes many days a week, that I'm playing like 14 hours, 16 hours sometimes in a day.
Wow.
Which is not, I mean, I don't recommend that for anyone, but there's things that I can't let go, you know, there's things that I want from myself that I've, and, you know, it would be different if I never, you know, a lot of perfectionists have this problem where they like, they just move the goalpost forever when they're almost got the thing figured out. They like tack on more goals, and like, and that's not me. I mean, I can be pretty focused on one thing and beat the hell out of it and get it right and take a break for a few days and chill out and play video games, drink wine, whatever. You know, like I can do that too. But, you know, when I get something in my mind, like I gotta get it right. Like I've been working on this solo record, and I was doing like pretty much four, like 14 hour days in my studio for 2 weeks straight for like about 13 days. With no stop in the middle, you know, just straight down. And so that, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, I see the perfectionist thing there, but, you know, it comes and goes.
I want to ask you about picking. Because,
yeah.
All right, so I play Irish banjo. Now, there's one of the fundamental differences. This is going to sound fantastic for people that listen to a podcast without video, but well, here we go. One of the fundamental differences is that we do loads of triplets, right?
Sure.
So the way that I have always taught is that all of the action comes through the movement of the wrist, right? So it's a really loose wrist. And in actual fact, you're kind of rotating through a support, the hand is very much supported and in contact with the banjo, right? So, and I would rarely play a whole load of eighth notes without ornaments, right? So, and the ornaments are a kind of like a thumb movement, and they provide they provide relief to my hand. Because the alternate picking for me gets kind of tiring after a while. So like I can do it, but not at great speed. So like, let's say a tune like this, right? So that's just like regular alternate picking. Now I can
badass,
go.
Man.
Yeah, but wait till I put in triplets. I can go five times as fast, which makes no sense, right? Thank you. not warmed up at all. But anyway, you get the idea.
Yeah, that's great.
So there's all of these triplets that are jumping in. Anyway, my observation is, and particularly with the David Benedicts of the world and the bluegrass mandolin players, is that it's very straight-wristed, but with super speed. And I always struggle to understand how that works.
Well, in my opinion, it could be working even better if they would loosen up a little bit, you know. But yeah, I mean, I think one thing is when you see guys who play with, and I'm not like digging on David. I think he's great. But like a lot of times when you see guys who aren't using their wrist, to me as a teacher and as a player, like that's a red flag for me. Like I would want to see that differently. Not only for, it might be working for the time being, but I sort of see techniques like that becoming unattainable as players get older, as players get worn out. You know, you're not meant to be that rigid when you're playing, or when you're doing anything. So I don't know. I mean, I tend to think, for the downstrokes and things, I let a lot of gravity doing the work for me, and not only just my wrist, but all the way from the elbow and on down. I tend to think of playing rhythm as being the correct mechanics, And if you're playing lead, you just shrink those down. You see a lot of guys who might play rhythm with a nice loose wrist. They go to play lead and they might play. A really rigid, like from the elbow. Whereas I feel like my rhythm technique and my lead technique are sort of feel the same, just different size, that feels pretty similar. I don't feel like I have two techniques there, although it might look a bit different,
Yeah, that's really interesting because I would say there's a lot of wrist movement in your playing. It looks a lot lighter than I would associate with a lot of pickers that I see.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know. I teach my students a lot, when they're talking about right hand, that we strive for comfort first, and then we fine tune all the details from there. Because I had a student once who had some kind of repetitive stress injury from playing guitar that prohibited him from ever bending his pointer finger again. His pointer finger was like this for life. And, that it wasn't my fault. It happened to him before he got to me, but it freaked me out, And like, so, and when you see guys like Tony Rice or whatever, whose technique like deteriorated so quickly when he was only like 50 years old or something, it's like not lost on me that it's important to make sure you're doing it in a healthy way, in a safe way that you can continue to do.
Did Tony have a dystonia? Was that what he had?
He did. Yeah. He did. And I know that that's not just due to like technique or whatever, but it's, you wonder how that stuff plays a part, especially when you watch close-ups of him playing. Sometimes he's very loose. Sometimes he's very rigid and tense and stuff. So it's just, I don't know. Make sure it feels sustainable. That's something I think about a lot. Like if you can't play a few tunes straight, if you couldn't play guitar for 10 minutes straight without getting sore or something, that would be cause for concern, I think. feel good. It should feel comfortable. It should feel, it should feel normal.
Who are your heroes?
Clarence White first, probably. And then everybody else can tie for second. I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of being funny, but definitely Clarence, man. I mean, Tony, obviously, Don Reno, Norman Blake, Doc Watson. Those are kind of like cop outs. Wyatt Rice is in there. Russ Barenberg, Dan Crary, just like naming every flat picker. But
now, what about modern players, like people that are producing records now and touring?
Yeah, I mean, Brian Sutton, who's like a good friend of mine, is also like the great, one of the greats ever, and kind of like I sort of view him in some ways as like the flat picking dad. You know, he's like our guy. Like if I needed advice, I would call Brian. You know, he's like the guy who's kind of our, he's kind of, you know, top of the heap. And then obviously Greer is great. David Greer is great. And he's also a big time fan of Clarence. So there's all sorts of things in his playing that I find really, really nice. You know, younger than those. I mean, Cody Kilby is another great player. You know, as far as like guys younger than that, give me every time. You know, I don't know.
What's your take then on, we'll say, new grass, you know, jazz grass, chamber grass, arena grass? Is that what we're dealing with these days? Stadium grass?
I don't know, man. It's all the same shit to me. I tend to think of like, I can dig whatever you're doing, is if you're playing traditional repertoire and you, or at the very least, you're able to play traditional repertoire and fiddle tunes and stuff like that. When you get into bands that are playing a new version of bluegrass, but they don't know how to play the old version, that's where I start to get a little dicey for me. You know, like I've seen, like take Billy Strings for an example. I mean, Billy is a guy that we've become, you know, friends only recently, like in the past year or two. And I think what Billy does is so cool. You know, he kind of has snuck traditional bluegrass into this other costume where he can bring it to all these people, you know, who are into jam bands and whatever. But when you sit down and pick tunes with Billy, he wants to play fiddle tunes. He wants to play Doc Watson tunes, and he wants to play Tony stuff and Clarence White, you know, like, and I think that's so cool. Now, I've also had students who are like, man, you know, we play in a, it's always some like bullshit thing. Like, man, we play in a heavy metal polka grass band or something, you know, it's always like junk like that. And you're like, oh, okay. Like, what flat pickers do you like? And then when they say like, well, I don't really know any, or like, what fiddle tunes do you like? Well, I don't really know any, you know, that then it's like, I couldn't care less about that shit. But if you're coming at it from a place of love of traditional music, then I say, go crazy and go for it. You know,
Just a quick change of pace. Talk to me about Instagram. I mean, cause it's like, you know, you're talking about traditional bluegrass and traditional flat pickers and these great, and then, you know, we're living in this world of Instagram, which has been very successful for you, but how does it interact with what you do for a living?
Man, it's funny. Like, I got really lucky on Instagram. I don't know what I did or even really still what I'm doing there. And I think that's why it's worked for me, where like I talk to players who talk a lot about like making content. Like, man, what time do you post and what camera do you use? What do you think of the algorithm and what, and you know, and I don't know anything about any of that at all. I only know what I do is like, if I'm working on something in my practice time or I'm working for record, I will turn my phone on and record about a minute of it. I'll say, here's this thing I'm working on. And that's it. You know, I don't do shit else. I don't sit around and scheme about like how to get views or anything like that. I mean, I don't, and I think people can tell that I'm more into like documenting my progress and my work rather than making like a product for folks. And now how does it interact with the way I make a living? It's a little different because it's, you know, you bring the people in with just the normal stuff. Like I said, I'm just playing for the people, but it gives you this pool of customers, which is another thing where like, if I make some material I want to sell, I have 75,000 people who want to buy it, you know. Or if I'm like this homestay thing, just by advertising that, and I say advertising, just saying, hey, here's the tune I'm working on, also if you want to come live at my house and study, send me a message, like just simple stuff like that. If I were to answer every email, every DM that I have, I might have 1,000 people in queue right off the bat who would come here. If I was answering every email about private students, I'm probably have like 4 or 5 years of stuff I could book, you know? And so it's like, and I'm not trying to cater to those people at all. I'm just trying to be great at guitar. And, you know, and I think that comes across pretty good.
Are you getting better all the time?
I feel like I am. I don't know. I mean, I don't. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it'll stop eventually. Maybe not. I mean, yeah, I do. I think I probably sound pretty much the same all the time to a lot of people. But yeah, to me, I do feel like I'm getting better, which is good. I think that's all you can ever hope for. You know, I think if you ask anybody, Tony Rice, ask Brian Sutton, ask whoever you want, like, are you still hoping to improve? I think the answer is yes.
How long do you practice for every day?
Probably at minimum. Well, it depends what you're considering practice. I probably have the guitar in my hand for on a bad day, 6 hours. You know, and that's like on a shitty. That's a day when I'm playing Mario Kart and ordering DoorDash shit. I mean, that's like a low day. You know, on a really quote unquote good day, a productive day, 14 hours, probably 15 hours.
Wow.
And that's wow. And again, that's not always. With the metronome on, playing to his playlist, but it, you know, yeah, I mean, like today, I've taught a little, and I've recorded a little, and I've practiced a little today. I don't know what time it is now. I've probably already got 5 hours with the guitar in hand today.
Wow, yeah, it's like it's not even noon in. Right. Well, yeah, are you in central? You're in central. Are you central time?
Eastern.
Yeah. Eastern. Okay, yeah, so it's like 1 o'clock. It's lunchtime. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's dedication, man.
Well, I just, you know, I was telling my students this the other day, like, listening to music is the thing I really like. If I could get paid to just listen to records, I would do that, you know. But that's not how it works. You have to, like, be great. So I'm just insistent on it, you know. I've never, like, I have an unhealthy attraction to being great at the guitar. Like I don't want to be in the community. I want to crush everything, everyone. I want to, you know what I mean? Like I have a sick, you know, like obsession with it. I really do.
Do you have an end line? Do you have a goal? I mean, well, do you have a goal in like, do you see yourself getting to a place where like, yes,
that's the other thing. I'm kind of in it. I think I'm there. Like I had a homestay student who asked me like 2 weeks ago. He's asked me that thing, like, what, like, if you could change anything about your life or about your career, like, what would it be? And I'm like, man, honestly, nothing. I have like a giant group of people who are like rabidly supportive of the art that I make, have a nice big house that I, you know, that when a wife that lives in it, and we have a bunch of records, and you know, I mean, I don't know. It's good. I can play as many gigs as I want. I can play as many records as I want. Like it's, you know, I have like a surplus of available work, which is insane. And like, yeah, I'm good. I could retire today. I'd be just a happy clam.
Jake, that's a great way to finish. And it's been it's been a pleasure talking to you. I hope I get to meet you sometime in the future and play a few 100%. Tunes. Yeah, I'd love it. Yeah, yeah. I'm a big admirer, and even more so now having had the chance to talk to you.
Well, cool, man. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.